listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. California has been slammed with more torrential rain and wind storms causing power outages, school closures, mudslides, and flooding. CBS's Carter Evans reports from Santa Cruz County.
In Los Angeles, a massive cleanup is underway. Overnight, up to 8 inches of rain triggered landslides, leaving behind a pile of mud in valley neighborhoods.
We're asking residents of Los Angeles and all of California to stay off the roadways as much as possible.
A large sinkhole created by the rainfall swallowed two cars. A mother and daughter had to be rescued.
Republicans in Congress are demanding answers about documents with classified markings discovered at a Washington, D.C. think tank that bears President Biden's name. CBS's Scott McFarlane reports.
The top Republican on the House Intelligence Committee, Michael Turner of Ohio, says he's going to ask the department and the director of national intelligence for a damage assessment of what might have been compromised, what damage might have been incurred by these records being in a Biden-affiliated personal office.
President Biden meets in Mexico City with his counterparts from Mexico and Canada. Mr. Biden says when it comes to the influx of migrants at the southern border,
we're working together to address this challenge in a way that upholds our nation's laws and protects the human rights of migrants facing desperate circumstances.
Ukrainian troops will come to the U.S. to train on a Patriot missile system the U.S. is providing the country. Pentagon spokesman Brigadier General Pat Ryder says the training will take place at Fort Sill in Oklahoma.
The training will prepare approximately 90 to 100 Ukrainian soldiers to operate, maintain, and sustain the defensive system over a training course expected to last several months.
Ryder says the U.S. hopes to expedite the training to return the soldiers to the battlefield as quickly as possible. Schools around the world are facing a growing problem with an AI software called ChatGPT. The problem? Students are using it to cheat on tests and even to write essays. CBS's Nikki Batiste with more.
Darren Hick, an assistant professor of philosophy at Furman University in South Carolina, recently caught a student using ChatGPT to plagiarize a written assignment.
This was a very well-written essay, but the things that they said were just thoroughly wrong.
He ran the student's essay through a detection program to see if the paper was written by a human.
I was now 99.whatever% confident that this was written by AI. And luckily for my purposes, the student copped to it. They admitted that they'd used ChatGPT.
Tonight's Mega Millions numbers are 15, 13, 7, 18, 14, and the Mega Ball is 9. The jackpot is $1.1 billion. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance, so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
We are joined by the 57th Assembly District Representative, Lee Snodgrass. Thanks for being here.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
How do I need to adapt this based on what has changed since I first introduced it? Government does not move fast. I'm sure that's a shocker to all of you guys. Public policy doesn't change until public opinion changes.
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Hey, Dad, your prescription will be ready in just a minute. Hey, Dad, your laundry will be ready in just a minute. Dad, your lunch will be ready in just a minute.
Hey, honey, why don't you take a minute?
When you help care for a loved one, you give them as much time as you can, making sure they're safe and comfortable. But it's just as important that you take some time for yourself. At AARP, we can help with information and useful tips on how you can maintain a healthy life balance, care for your own physical and mental well-being, and manage the challenges of caring for a loved one. Because the better care you take of yourself, the better care you can provide for your loved one.
Thanks, Dad.
Thank you.
You're there for them. We're here for you. Find free care guides to support you and your loved one at aarp.org/caregiving. That's aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. What's your name? Gina Beauclair.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
What's your name? Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Thank you for joining us today on your lunch hour. What's coming up this hour at 12:30? We are talking to Dr. Mark Markle, another great name.
Yes.
Who is the Dean of the School of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Because if you are a pet owner, you may have noticed that, like so many professions right now, there is a veterinarian shortage.
They're so busy.
There's a couple different reasons, it sounds like, why. It's not even that so much that it sounds like there's less veterinarians, it's that they're choosing to not work 70 hours a week. And so even with the same number, if you have that same workforce working less, which I think is reasonable, 70 hours a week is a lot.
Yes, it is.
But it sounds like there's a variety of different causes of why there is a veterinarian shortage. He's going to join us to talk a little bit more about what those reasons are, what recommendations he has for animal owners when it comes to getting care for your pet. So stick around for that conversation. And then we're also speaking of workforce, not in Wisconsin, but in other states. There is now, as of January 1st, more pay transparency laws. And you'd be surprised in New York and San Francisco what the ranges are.
Oh.
So we're going to discuss that later. But I think they're real. I don't know. I can't tell if they're a joke or not. But it's shocking to see someone's actual pay in like a monster.com posting be like $900,000. Yes.
$900,000?
We'll get there. We're going to talk about that at the end of the hour. But to start, Wisconsin Supreme Court. It's happening. It's here. And it always feels so trite to say it's the most important election of our lives. But in Wisconsin, and also for the nation, I mean, this is an incredibly, incredibly important election.
Yes.
And my fear is because it's in the spring, because there's not other statewide, let alone national elections happening like there are in the fall every 2 years. And so the hyper awareness of everyone where you can't even escape it feels like you don't even know there's an election. Now, there is going to be millions of dollars put into this campaign.
And you're going to see the ads.
And you'll see the ads. But I worry that this, despite how important and how consequential this race is, that voter turnout will be low. Like, I think it's a safe bet to say we will not get 3 million people to vote in this election like we did in November-ish. Yeah. It was just shy of 3 million, I think, that vote ended up voting in November. And so I'm asking now, and I'll probably ask this multiple times between now and April, do you already know who you're going to vote for? And if so, I'm assuming that you're probably more plugged into politics, because I don't even know who I'm going to vote for yet. But if you don't know, or if you don't even know if you're going to vote yet, what information do you need? What information can we provide to help you make that choice and motivate you to vote?
What questions do you have?
Yes. And so you said we had someone who texted in?
We do. Text here from the 608. Thanks so much for checking in. Going with Judge Janet here, Everett Mitchell is a great judge and would be an excellent justice, but I worry he will get crucified by the thinly veiled racist tough on crime messaging that the right loves so much. He probably wouldn't play as well statewide. Also from the 608, the most important thing is getting out the vote. We have to pester our friends, family, and neighbors. My circle is so sick of me asking about their voting plan. I'll be damned if that strategy didn't work in November, though. So we got to keep it, keep the energy going on the left. Keep it up. Yep.
Bug your friends. Be annoying.
Be a pest.
But as you can imagine, both Wisconsin Republicans and Democratic parties, as well as outside political groups, are going to pour millions of dollars and thousands of hours in time into what will end up being the April 4th general race for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. The primary is February 21st. A reminder that you can go get your sign up to get your absentee ballot for both of those races right now on myvote.wi.gov. You can only request it unless you're indefinitely confined. Each year you have to go back to the website and check the box saying just mail me all my my absentee ballots. And so since we just got done in November, check out that website, go request them for the year. Unless you're planning to vote in person, then just mark your calendars. But just a reminder that you can go do that now, which also serves as a reminder because then it just sits in your little inbox or wherever you keep your mail or your documents to be processed. And it's a reminder, at least it is for me, that you have to vote. Remember to vote. But why does this matter so much? Groups with a vested interest in the outcome of these political fights, from abortion to redistricting to recusals. So there's so many things that are in limbo right now because of what power the court has. And so regardless of what happens between the Republican-controlled legislature and the Democrat governor, Tony Evers, these groups have a good chance of getting their way if they can get their preferred candidate on the narrowly divided court. And so right now, the court currently has a 4-3 conservative majority. And so with Brian Hagedorn as kind of this surprisingly swing vote.
Yeah.
Because,
and a big disappointment for some on the right.
Yes. And so he is someone who was pegged as a conservative justice when he ran. He won. And much to the dismay of many on the right, he rules often based on what the law says, not his ideology. Imagine that.
What's wrong with this picture?
So it's been a handful of times that he has sided with the liberal judges. But even with that, if two of the left-leaning Democratic-backed candidates were to flip the seat, the ideological balance of the court would be flipped. And we could, and if you've listened to the show or you've seen any of my content over the last three years, we could change the redistricting lines before another 9 years.
Yes.
And that, as much as you probably know where Jane and I fall on what we would like to see happen with Wisconsin's abortion law, that is very important. But I for me, even more important is getting fair maps and letting, you know, when we were talking to Senator Melissa Agard yesterday, and her priority of getting into parts of the state that, you know, there are Democrats across the state. I'll put these numbers out there again. The love of some people to categorize that all of the Democrats in Wisconsin just live in Dane County and Milwaukee County, the math doesn't add up. So around 250,000 people in Milwaukee County voted for Evers. Around 250,000 people in Dane County voted for Evers, but the guy got 1.3 million votes.
So he got votes from other counties.
Yes. And so with how gerrymandered the maps are, it's hard for the people who live throughout the state who do have, who do lean left, who do vote Democratic, to get representation. And I'm not saying that I want them to be gerrymandered for Democrats. I just want them to be actual represent the counties and also the, you know, the communities of interest as far as people who share the same county and cities and school districts, and not splitting things up in this arbitrary way based on voting habits. But anyways, so that is one of the big things that could come before the court much more prematurely until the next time that we were to get a chance to redistrict.
And I just have to think that no matter your political leanings, whether you're a Democrat or an independent or a Republican, you would want fair maps, because then your representatives would actually have to respond to issues that you care about.
Yeah.
And when they are so heavily gerrymandered, they don't have to do anything that their constituents want, because they know they're going to get reelected. So this is really for all of us.
Yes.
It is. It's for all of us.
Yes.
Again, the vast majority of people in Wisconsin want medical marijuana. The vast majority of Wisconsinites do not want permitless concealed carry. And if you want your representatives to have to respond to what you want, then the gerrymander's got to go.
So, not to get too far down a different rabbit hole, but that is one of the major things that could be decided based on how this seat goes.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a reminder, we're going to still talk about this after the break, but the candidates are former state Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly, who was beaten. He was appointed by Scott Walker. And then when he was up for reelection, he lost to Jill Karofsky in 2020. He is backed by Republicans. Waukesha County Circuit Judge Jennifer Doro, also conservative. Actually, she got two, I think, fairly big endorsements this week. Devin Lamahieu, who's the Senate Majority Leader, backed her. And also, Ragansack also just endorsed her yesterday.
Oh, wow. This is who she would be replacing.
She's replacing. So as of yesterday, she endorsed Doro, saying that she had the most experience. And then the other two candidates are the ones that are backed by Democrats, even though they don't identify as Democrats, which is Dane County Circuit Judge Everett Mitchell and Milwaukee County Circuit Judge Janet Protasiewicz, which we got confirmation this morning that we were saying correctly.
I checked with their campaign.
And their platforms, their endorsements, their talking points mirror the party that supports them. But this is a nonpartisan race. And so
it's not supposed to be political.
It's not supposed to be political. So yesterday, WisPolitics held a forum, which was the first joint appearance for all four candidates since they filed to run for the seat. And when we come back from this break, let's talk about some of the things that were said on some of these major issues. You can also go to WisPolitics, and see, if you want to watch the whole thing, they recorded it. But I'm going to do my best to summarize it and spice it up a little bit. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation.
Yes.
With the I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which
Correct.
Was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a while, Gina Beauclair.
Whoa, well.
Come back, Matt. I really miss him. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
What's your mind to Andrew of Detroit?
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Overcast overnight with a low of 31. Winds out of the southwest around 5 miles an hour. A few flurries possible at times. Tomorrow, highs around 44, cloudy. Slight chance for scattered showers tomorrow night. Lows dip down to about 32, cloudy skies. A dusting of snow Thursday through Thursday night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Hite. Currently, it's 32 degrees.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We got Jane Matinair on the board. We are taking your calls and text messages about what you need to know to make a decision on who you're going to vote for the Wisconsin Supreme Court, or if you already know who you're going to vote for. You can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. After the break, we are going to be talking to Dr. Mark Markle about the veterinarians shortage, so stick around for that. But for now, I thought I'd kind of review some of the things that were said at yesterday's forum with all four candidates.
First time they've all sat down together.
Yep. And it sounds like it was, I mean, I don't think there was any fireworks. It wasn't the debate between, was it the second debate between Ron Johnson and Mandela Barnes that was so saucy?
A little testy.
Yeah, it sounds like this was,
it's pretty polite.
Pretty polite. But some of the things that I thought was interesting, and the first thing is the recusal. And this idea of, and this goes for all judges, right? Of the attempt that, or the idea that when there is more connection to a case, that a judge should recuse themselves.
Conflict of interest.
And interestingly enough, because as you can imagine, there's a lot of outside interest groups that are expected to spend a lot of money and influence to get influence in the contest. And then many of those groups could someday have business ahead of the court. I'm thinking of different lobbying groups, namely, you think of the WMC. But right now, it's just up to the justices themselves whether or not to recuse themselves. There is no criteria, although there has been an effort to get the court to adopt consistent recusal standards. But interestingly enough, the only person of the four to say that we should have standards is Prusiewicz. All the other three said it should be up to the judge and their integrity. Doro said, quote, my integrity cannot be bought by anyone. Justice requires that judges and justices hear the case that come before the court. We have an ethical obligation to diligently take care of our cases. Kelly also said, only we can truly know whether we are going to be adversely impacted by someone's contribution. It would be extraordinarily difficult to develop a standard of recusal. And that Mitchell actually said he didn't endorse new recusal standards, saying it should just be up to the justices to be frank with people who come into their courtroom. But then Prusiewicz did endorse the idea. And I don't know enough about the law to know how you would create standards. And I feel like anytime there's a rule that gets created, people who want to figure out how to break the rule, they're going to break the rule. But it does feel in the push and pull of you know, in the United States Supreme Court, it's an appointment versus us electing people. And there's pros and cons of both of those things. And one of the cons, I would say, of electing justices is that they need money to have a campaign. And people can donate to that campaign. And
hoping to get the results that they want.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And so that was one of the main topics that I thought was interesting. Redistricting also came up. And Protasiewicz pretty clearly, unapologetically said, let's be clear here, the maps are rigged. I don't think you could sell to any reasonable person that the maps are fair. And there was the conversation around what happened the last time with least change and kind of arguing for and why that should or should not have been the criteria. Because, and Protasiewicz says, I see no basis in the Constitution or basis in case law of why that was the case. And it was interesting because Mitchell, running as the only Black candidate, made the point of, you know, when as a judge, often when you hear this least change ideology or like criteria, is how much that puts people who have been oppressed in the position of not people not wanting things to change. Because in you think of people, Black people in the state, Black people in this country, the only thing way things get better for them is by saying, we're not going to do it the way that we did it before, right?
Time for a new way.
And so I thought that was an interesting point. But then, as you can imagine, Doro just really didn't talk about it much. She described it as interesting, but declined to weigh in on the maps and or discuss the court's rationale.
It sounds like Doro worked a lot off of notes and didn't have a lot of off-the-cuff responses.
Heard?
That's what I read. I think it was in the Journal Sentinel.
So she said, I'm looking at WPR right now, but she said she's not going to put herself in position to prejudge anything. And then, as you can imagine, Kelly said that he was very taken aback by that Protasiewicz would be so value-driven. And she said, she's like, this is my value. I have to say, once the case is... And I think this is the thing that's hard for judges in general, and this is so often what we hope, I think, ideally, is that they put their values aside, but ultimately you're still in the election process trying to vet out what those values are, because I think it is really hard for any individual to not have their values influence their opinion when they're interpreting the law.
Yep.
And so then finally, there wasn't an exact question directly about abortion, but the abortion topic came up when they were asked to name the worst Supreme Court ruling they'd seen in the last 30 years. And Protasiewicz and Mitchell both listed Dobbs, which was the case that overturned Roe v. Wade. And Mitchell saying it was the first time in his whole study of the law that he can see the Supreme Court actually took away a right, and that we're now dealing with the consequences of instability. And Protasiewicz says she was surprised. But here's the thing that I thought was really interesting as far as Doro and the question of what is the worst Supreme Court case rule.
Mm-hmm.
And for her, it wasn't in yesterday's forum, but in her application to the Waukesha County Circuit Court, she cited the 2003 U.S. Supreme Court decision overturning a Texas anti-sodomy law as the worst ruling of the Supreme Court. She didn't say this yesterday. She said it when she was applying to be a judge in 2003.
Mm.
And then, so I just think that's interesting. I just think it's interesting that she at one point thought that was such a bad rule. All right. When we come back, Dr. Mark Marker will be here. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
WAUK 540 AM. New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. The death toll is rising in California from a series of major storms. Governor Gavin Newsom says there are now 17 confirmed deaths.
We have that young 5-year-old that is missing, and we just pray. I mean, this is, if you have any faith, it's at moments like this, we just pray for a miracle.
President Biden says he's surprised that some documents marked classified were found in an office he used after he left the vice presidency.
And we're cooperating fully with the review, and which I hope will be finished soon, and there'll be more detail at that time.
A delighted Michelle Yeoh won a Golden Globe tonight for her role in the movie Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Okay, I'm just going to stand here and take this all in.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. What's your name today, Gina Beauclair?
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
What's your name today, Andrew of Detroit?
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
We stand on the shoulders of the women who came before us.
Women who were told they were bad with money.
Women who couldn't even get a credit card without a man co-signing.
Women who fought for their own financial futures.
And now it's our turn to lead the way.
Join us at WeSaySaveIt.org,
where women of all ages and all budgets are learning how to save for retirement.
You work hard.
You make money.
Now make that money work for you.
Invest in yourself at WeSaySaveIt.org.
A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's that song again.
Yay!
Here's that song again.
For the 100th time today.
Here's that song again.
It's gonna be stuck in your head all day.
Yay!
Here's that song again.
It will make you cray cray.
You love your kids enough to watch that TV show a bajillion times.
Yay!
Love them enough to make sure they're in the right car seat for their age and size. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Here's today's STEM tip. Don't throw out that old plastic bottle. Repurpose it by turning it into an awesome terrarium. Just fill it with sand, pebbles, soil, and your favorite plant. It'll grow sealed right in its own ecosystem. Learn more at SheCanSTEM. A message from the Ad Council.
Well, my dad is a vet, and if I was one too, the one thing he always taught me to do is get paid. Cash money. See, jam and eggs is a kind enough thank you, but not for the bookkeeper, not for the banker. The margin's thin on treating large animals, unless it's a purebred or more understandable, a racehorse of some kind. You see, son, city folks pay a high dollar.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. No matter where you're listening, across the Civic Media Network or on the Civic Media app, thank you for tuning in and listening to us today. So, Wisconsinites are feeling the effects of a national veterinarian shortage. So it turns out that a 2021 study found that open veterinarian positions in the United States exceeded the number of qualified candidates by over 2,000 back in 2019, and it's only gotten worse since the COVID-19 pandemic. So here to talk us through more about the shortage and the challenges that has this has created is Dr. Mark Markle, who is the dean of the School of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, a Vilas Distinguished Achievement Professor and immediate past president of the American Association of Veterinary Medical Colleges. Welcome to the show, Dr. Markle.
Thank you for inviting me, Kristen.
So we saw this, and as both Jane and I are both big animal lovers, I have a small Chihuahua mix of some sort named Clifford. And so far, I haven't run into this personally, but that doesn't mean that it's not a problem. So what are some of the challenges right now? And like, how much in Wisconsin are we seeing those numbers that I said as far as how many open positions there are versus how many candidates that there are?
Well, you've already highlighted some of it. You know, nationally right now, there's around 2,000 to 3,000 more open positions in the.
Oh.
Did we lose him?
We might have lost him.
Internet issues, perhaps?
Maybe internet issues. Potentially, we could
try and reconnect.
Try to reconnect and try to maybe call Dr. Markle.
You good?
Now we can hear you. Yes, now we can hear you.
You dropped out for a little bit there.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm in a hotel.
Oh.
And so don't know for sure the stability. So over the last 10 years, the increase in demand for veterinary services has been about 10% a year, but we're only producing about 2.7% per year of more veterinarians. So almost by definition, the demand is far exceeding the number of veterinarians being trained. And so that's certainly a challenge. In addition, and I think one of the another major player is there's a substantial shortage of veterinary technicians or veterinary nurses, is what we call them, of somewhere a number of around 50,000 shortage nationwide. So it makes it very challenging to see the number of patients that we want to see, whether it's at the School of Veterinary Medicine or within the state of Wisconsin. I'm also on the Wisconsin Veterinary Medical Association board, and the same issues are impacting both clients, owners of pets, and other animals, as well as veterinarians across Wisconsin.
And so with that, is it just a training issue? Is it just not enough people are going into, going through the post, doctorate school, but going to veterinary school? Is it, it's mostly on like the top of the funnel side, or is it that people are leaving the profession, or what are some of the major causes that's leading to having this shortage?
So the interesting thing is we have 96 slots each year for veteran students. It's a 4-year program. Most people do 4 years of undergraduate before, so 8 years total. We had 2,300 applicants for 96 spots. So it's not that people don't want to go to veterinary school. And in fact, nationwide across all veterinary schools, the increased number of applicants is up about 25% in the last 3 years. So, but here's the challenge is about 6 years ago, we saw this coming. And so increased our class size by 20%. We used to have 80 per year. Now we have 96. And that is occurring across the country to do that or have done that. But as you might imagine, you enter your freshman year, it takes 4 years for you to graduate. So even if we did all those things today, you wouldn't see that effect for another 4 or 5 or 6 years. In addition is infrastructure requirements. So we increased to 96. And if I had the ability, I'd probably increase even further. But I don't have the office space or the laboratory space or the teaching spaces to accommodate more than 96. So it's really challenging on that front. Nationally,
Mark, you still there? I think we dropped him.
We might have. Okay.
Sorry.
It's okay.
So it'll take, even though we've just started 4 or 5 new veterinary schools, one in Texas, one in Long Island, one in New Jersey, one in Tennessee, it's going to take 5 or 6 years for those students to get into veterinary school, graduate, start practicing. So it's going to take a while. The other major impact is because there's such a demand for companion animal veterinarians, like people that would take care of your dog, the financial remuneration for those graduates is much higher than in food animal practice, rural practice, horse equine practice. And so a lot of students who might have done some of those other things are going into companion animal practice. There's still a shortage in companion animal practice, but there's a significant shortage in rural communities, and communities that serve, production animals like cattle, sheep, goats, horses, and those kinds of things.
Mark, I can remember so clearly growing up in the 60s, and we grew up in a small town. I grew up in Hartford, and our local veterinarian was a large animal. That was predominantly his thing, and he did dogs and cats kind of as a side thing, and that has almost completely flipped on its head since then, right? As you were saying, there's right. So much more interest in dealing with small animals, but we still need farriers and we still need veterinarians for all these other farm animals.
Well, the good news on that front is Wisconsin trains more dairy practitioners and large animal practitioners than any other school in the country. But at the same time, there is this pressure, whether it's where you want to raise your family or where or how you're compensated. You're going to get compensated better in an urban area, you know, in companion animal practice. So we do need to continue to focus on that as far as, you know, figuring out a pathway to make sure those veterinarians serve those communities that need them. The other component, you know, that is, you know, remaining to be a challenge is figuring out a pathway to increase that compensation, but also minimize or at least try not to increase their debt load to such an extent that they can't afford to live in those communities. And so there are loan repayment programs that are available for some of our students, and we're really working with the federal government in that case to try to enhance that. Right now, when veterinarians serve in rural communities in Wisconsin, they can get debt relief up to $75,000, but unlike the human medical profession, they have to pay taxes on that. So we've been trying to get that relieved, and we've been working with Senator Baldwin and others with the Wisconsin delegation to try to, you know, reverse that or at least make that not taxable.
That's really interesting. I mean,
why is that fair?
It's not fair, but as you might imagine, the medical profession led it 30 years ago, and we kind of tagged onto it. And for whatever reason, we didn't get that benefit. We got some of the benefit, but not as much of the benefit as that we wanted. The other piece I just wanted to highlight that is significantly changing the demand, as you highlighted, Jane, in that day, people would work, and when I graduated many years ago, they typically work 60, 70, 80 hours a week. They might work every other weekend on call. They might actually not have an emergency clinic to rely on, so they actually have to provide emergency care all nights. And our students, as they graduate, want to live a more balanced life. So they might want to work a normal 40 or maybe 50-hour work week. So if you think about it, even without that increase in veterinary services, even if that stayed the same, if people are working fewer hours, all of a sudden you're short a significant number of people that want to work a normal life rather than work that 70 or, you know, the James Harriet, you know, all things great, small life.
Yeah. And that's what's really interesting to me that I read when I first was reading about this is that it's the numbers of how many people we actually need could actually be skewed because of how much people used to work in this job, like the hours put in, and that the actual, if people are going to work normal hours, that there's even more people that will end up needing because the hours need to be filled. And so we're talking to Dr. Mark Markle, who is the Dean of the School of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And one thing, when you graduate and you are now a veterinarian, what does the job landscape look like? How often are people leaving and applying for a job to be employed somewhere as a veterinarian versus starting their own practice? Like, I think about this often with dentists who you are simultaneously a business owner on top of your, you know, skilled profession versus there's just open jobs that need to be filled.
So, you know, I'd say it's changing. So corporate veterinary practice is taking over. It was probably less than 10% of all veterinary practices in the country 10 years ago, and it's over 25% now. There's many major players. In fact, Mars Company is the biggest player. The ones that make chocolate, yes.
I was just going to say, my face was like, the M&M guys?
The M&M guys. And so that's one piece. Most of our students now have 3 to 5 job offers in the winter before they graduate. And in fact, for the first time, we have a significant number of students in their third year, a year and a half before they graduate, that have a number of job offers. So, but the tendency there is you have an offer, you get a benefit package, you get to define those hours we were talking about earlier to whatever you want to sign on to. You know, you can, if you want to work for corporate veterinary medicine, you could say, I'm only working 3 days a week or 4 days a week or 5 days a week or whatever it might be. So I'd say the majority of our students go down that path because that path you're describing of buying your own practice, setting it up, having employees and all those things some want to do it, and obviously some do it, but you're working a significantly, you have much greater financial risk, and you're working significantly more hours. So I'd say there's fewer of those people doing that today than when I graduated, 35 years ago.
And that's fascinating to think about that. And is that for what we're saying, like the small pet veterinary clinics? It's a lot more and more of them are owned by a bigger corporation.
Yeah, and you won't even see it typically, although it might say somewhere if you go to your clinic, a VCA office or a Banfield office, but you might not even see that to know that it is owned. One advantage, and I'm not saying either way is good or bad, but one advantage of it is obviously they have scale. They have the ability to purchase all their drugs nationally and cut a deal. They have and that's all the supplies that you might need. They have a standardized way of employment and how you manage workflow as well as medical records. So there are many advantages as far as efficiencies that might be gained through corporate practice. Interestingly, although you're right, it's predominantly companion animal practice, it's not entirely companion animal practice. There certainly are many practices across Wisconsin in the last 10 years that have become corporate that I think some clients wouldn't even know.
That is super interesting. Now I want to go look at our veterinarian and see if they're owned by a bigger company.
Mark, I have one real quick question because we only got about 2 minutes left. What is the worst animal bite you've ever received?
Oh, I've got a good one. So I think highlighted you earlier, I'm an equine surgeon by training. My girlfriend, when I was a resident, I was a resident at the University of California, Davis, and my girlfriend had a polo horse called Olive. And so I wanted to prove to her how great I was. So I put my hand in her horse's mouth to palpate his teeth to see whether you had to float them, where you make them even. And Olive chomped on my finger, and I didn't want her to know it. But then when blood started running out of his mouth onto the ground, I figured I couldn't hide it anymore. So then I took my finger out. So she thought it was serious.
Was it broken? What was the diagnosis? No. What happened to your finger?
Oh, it was fine.
Okay.
Nothing. He just
thought it was
just
okay.
It was just a munch.
All right. Well, Dr. Mark Markle, thank you so much for spending time with us today. This is super interesting. And I'm sure we'll have some follow-ups as far as where we are maybe 6 months from now.
Sounds great, Kristen. It really is great speaking with you, and everybody have a great rest of your day.
You too. Thank you so much. All right. Well, when we come back, a different kind of workforce update that has to do with pay transparency. And maybe, Jane, we're in the wrong business. Maybe we should have been software engineers. All right. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
And bled to death in front of his owner. Thank you, Doc. What do I... Oh, yeah. Well, that's how it goes if the sugar beet chokes. Just don't get me started on.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
I asked what kind of family she wanted. She said, a family like yours.
Learn more about adopting a teen at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on The Shaw. Chance for scattered snow showers overnight, otherwise cloudy. Lows dip down to about 29. Southwesterly winds around 5 miles an hour. A few flurries possible at times tomorrow, 47. Cloudy skies. Overcast again tomorrow night. Lows level off around 32. A dusting of snow Thursday through Thursday night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 32 degrees.
WAUK 540 AM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. A reminder that if you missed any part of today's show, you can always go back and listen to it as a podcast on Apple or Spotify or on asgoeswisconsin.com/listen. If you find it on the website, you can see more of the links and articles that we talk about during the show and go read the first-hand source. Or maybe you can go apply to be a Oscar Mayer Wienermobile driver.
Hey.
The hot dogger.
The opportunity is there.
Absolutely. So I think this is really interesting. And I think I am for these new pay transparency laws that are becoming law in different states. And Wisconsin doesn't have one. But as of January 1st, California companies have been required to post salary ranges for open positions. And this had already been the law in New York.
So this is just salary ranges. This isn't giving anyone specific salary information.
No, it's saying,
if you are in this position, you can earn from this to this.
Okay. And this was already a law in New York. And is this employers making a joke out of it? Is it just reflecting the seriousness of it? Depends. Because I do understand that to a certain extent, with experience, I guess mostly it should just be experience. Jane's saying no. But in a lot of jobs, it comes, you know, what you're actually end up getting paid is not just, this is the budget we've allotted for this position. There is some flexibility based on who the person ends up being. But the reason why I'm bringing this up is, because if you were applying to be a software engineer at Netflix, which is in California,
yeah,
you can expect to make somewhere between $90,000 and $900,000.
Wow, that's quite the range.
That's literally what they posted on a recent job post. And this is, they're not the only ones. A different one for Netflix, for a senior UI artist is $50,000 to $600,000. At Google, the VP of product management, $550,000.
Not bad.
At Tesla, for another software engineer, somewhere between $83,000 and $418,000.
All right, there's room for growth.
I love that there is a cap, but it's a very like specific cap. It wasn't like, oh, 80K to 400K.
Right.
It's 83,000 to 418, not 19, 18,000. And I mean, God, this makes me think I love my job. I love my job. But there is sometimes when I look at these, I was like, oh, if I would have just stayed in tech, my 401k would probably look a lot better right now.
You know, it's unfortunate, though, because I think in so many industries, and this can be applied to magazines and newspapers and television and radio, you used to be able to make a good living.
Yeah.
Reporters, television reporters, even people behind the scenes, everything changed after the crash in 2008. At least that was my experience.
Well, also, I feel like to a certain extent, and I have no data necessarily to back this up, in desirable careers, it's very much feast or famine. And desirable careers, and I use that term knowing that it's a subjective term, but if we think about entertainment and people who want to be an actor, want to be a singer, want to be a dancer, journalism is in the practice of what you do I think is a exciting, interesting job.
Really valuable.
Really valuable job. And that's anywhere from being a broadcaster to on the TV, radio, being a written journalist. But it's even, and now there's like content creators and there, you know, the things where this feels like the actual job you're doing is fun versus just working for the man in some way or another. Right. And there, the people at the very top of a lot of those positions, not working for the man, but what I'm deeming very desirable for the work. People at the very top make tons
great
of money,
money,
right? Like Rachel Maddow is making $30 million a year. And that's just on her show.
Right.
Who knows what else other things she has lined up.
Trust me, there are people within broadcasting who are still making great money.
And same thing with actors, right? Same thing with comedians. And that there's the people who are at the very top who have an audience, who can monetize that audience in one way or another, and who have influence, make a lot of money. And then in entertainment, for all of the people who are ancillary to that, so crew or whatever, up-and-coming actors, it's like you can maybe get by, depending. Reporters. I mean, there was, for a while, I know, as I was trying to make the transition out of tech into media, the meager wages that entry-level people get and the conversation around who can even afford to take those jobs as entry-level young journalists.
Mm-hmm.
And largely it's people who come from money. People who can afford to live in New York, on New York City, on $40,000 a year, maybe less, because that's what the company's paying for an entry-level position. But who can actually afford to do that, let alone an unpaid internship,
right,
is people who come from money, so their parents are footing the bill for them to live in the place they need to be to have that job.
Yep.
And it, especially in a job like journalism, having a an entry-level workforce that all comes from a very similar background is not a good thing.
No, it's not.
Having diverse voices and diverse perspectives being the people who are writing the stories is a good thing.
Because it's critical.
We intake this information to learn things. And sometimes that includes learning things from people who have a perspective and experience that is different than ours. And so I just think it's really interesting. I maintain that I think this is a good thing, even if it is this huge range. Because for no other reason, that it's having the first time we have a look at some of these influential tech companies that you can see what the kind of different atmosphere that this group of people live in, of what is a normal pay range for people who are trying to get jobs at Apple and Tesla and Meta and Google, Meta being Facebook, and how that is very different than what is the average or median income for the United States, like $60,000?
If that.
And, you know, it just shows that there is a huge discrepancy.
And there's money out there, apparently.
And there's money out there.
So if you were going to apply for this Netflix job and it's between 90 and 900,000, where's your ask?
Well, I'm not a software engineer, so
this is hypothetical.
I mean, you start at the top.
You start at 900?
Of course.
Oh, you're so brave.
If it's listed that they're willing and could go up to that, unless in the first interview they say, yeah, that was just a joke. Right? I mean, that is the point of these laws, is by having the pay range, you have an idea of going in there of what to even ask for, because the first thing in like negotiating that I ever learned is don't make the first offer, because then you put an anchor on what you're worth.
Good point.
If they thought in their brain, oh, we could go higher, and then you come up saying $20,000 less, that's how we get a pay gap. All right, take another break for the top of the hour news. Stick around. Talking to Pam Jahnke when we come back.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
The Devil's Advocates, never personal, only politics.
Relative to population, I believe Waukesha County is running like twice the mortality rate of Dane County.
Right. Well, and then you and your wife braved Mayville to see the band or the play.
But man, I'm vaxxed. I'm boosted. I'm feeling pretty good about life. Well, I don't know about good shape, but I'm vaxxed and I'm boosted.
Yeah. Did you have a couple glasses of wine up there?
No wine. Lots of rum. Rum-tum-tum.
Lots of rum.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter. Telling my girls about my Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard.
But Mom's early detection gave us time to make a plan.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.